Phil Mackey, Judd Zolgad.
I tune in to hear the hysteria and the insanity.
Mackey and Judd.
Now we need to work on that.
On 1500 ESPN.
Wolves and Spurs tonight. Without Kawhi Leonard or Tony Parker or the retired Tim Duncan, obviously.
Red thing. Turn the mic on.
That is a sad sounding
wolf. Yeah, that's
wolf,
a really
Dave.
Bad. That's like a sick wolf. That's like a wolf in the last 13 years of no plows.
It's the best thing. Well, yeah.
Is that from the internet somewhere?
Yeah, I just pulled it off of YouTube. It's the best one I could find.
I don't know. Let's try it again. Do you have it again?
Yeah, it's right on your page there, but.
Sounds like a dog that just got hit by a car. More than a timber wolf or a wolf.
No, it's sort. Just a wolf in the woods.
Can't you see it? Can't you see it when I say it?
It does.
Oh my God, Fido just got hit by a car.
It does. All right. A segment that we haven't done in like a month here. It's kind of a fun segment. We like to call How Will This End Up? Okay. Dave, pitch in as you will here, okay? How will this end up? Timberwolves and Spurs tonight. No Kawhi Leonard, no Tony Parker, and the Wolves have a full allotment, probably their best roster in 15 years. How will tonight's game end up? We'll start with Judd.
It will end up with a very narrow, competitive, and unfortunately, a Wolves loss.
Wow. Look at that.
I mean, they should win the game, but it's the Spurs. They're in San Antonio. It's a Popovich team. But it'll be competitive, it'll be compelling, and I do think the Wolves will follow up the loss tonight with a victory over Ricky Rubio and the Utah Jazz on Friday.
It will be similar, but not entirely like a lot of games last year. I told you and write that down last Friday, the Wolves would start 2-0. They will jump out to a big lead. They will lead by a lot, and then things look like they will start to unravel. The Spurs will come back within striking distance, but our guy Jimmy's going to put his foot down and say, no, not when I'm here. Wolves hold on and win.
Nice.
So the opening line for this game was 6.5. San Antonio, 6.5. Mm-hmm. And I think that's when Kawhi Leonard was going to play. And now it's 1.5. So it's a testament to the Spurs that they can be without Hall of Famers and top three players in the league. And they're still a favorite against a really good Timberwolves roster. I think the Timberwolves, I don't know if they take like a 15 or 20 point lead, but I'm with Dave. I think we get a closeout performance by Karl-Anthony Towns and Jimmy Butler, and we notice sparks off the bench that didn't exist last year. So either Jamal Crawford or like Nemanja Bjelica, one of those guys is going to get hot from 3-point range, and the Timberwolves will hold off the charging Spurs in the fourth quarter late tonight.
And then they'll go home sick. Because that sounds like a sick, sick puppy. The Twins, as we've been talking about for a couple of weeks on this very show, need bullpen help. How will this end up going into opening day of the 2018 season? How will this end up as far as the Twins bullpen and how much help they might get or might not get this offseason? Phil Mackey?
I stand by, we did a segment on this the day after the season ended, and I stand by what I said then. I think they go out. There's what they should do and what I think they will do. And I actually think they're going to be pretty close together. It's unlike the Terry Ryan regime where it was like, they should go do this. Nope, they're going to get Kevin Correa. Oh, okay.
And then they're going to tell you, it's just fine, Phil. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, we have 25 scouts that told us why Kevin Correa actually isn't as crappy as the last 10 years in the National League show you. Oh, wait, no, you're wrong. So I would say they go out and they acquire either via free agent signing or trade two outside bullpen bridge relievers. So guys that you can pitch between the sixth and the ninth innings that you trust late in game. So they're going to spend big money, relatively big money, on at least one arm. I don't think it's Wade Davis, $15 million a year money, but I think it's like Addison Reed money, $7 million a year or something for an eighth inning guy. Or a Brian Shaw.
Okay.
So I think they go outside the organization, and then they just leave the other five spots up to the internal candidates, the Trevor May coming back, or Tyler Jay, guys like that, who didn't have a chance to pitch for the big league team in 2017.
I think that's just about right. They go outside, and they get one, we'll call it a quality arm, somebody better than Craig Breslow. I guess they get one quality arm
by Craig Breslow shot right there.
I don't think they get any more than that. I think they get one guy and we say, yay, how about more? And then it just doesn't work out.
Yeah, I think they go get, I think they're going to get two guys. I think they probably get a guy like Reed, and I think they get a guy like Kinsler back. And then here, but here's what I think that they do too, taking a page from how teams operate now, since they should be competitive next year. In July, they then go make a significant deal for another key bullpen arm. And so potentially going into the playoffs, you'd be looking at an upgrade of three guys, at least at least three, not two, but you start on opening day with two.
I could see them going, I could see them getting like Alex Cobb as a number four starter in free agency, a guy who used to be a really highly touted arm before surgery, but he had a comeback season last year, was pretty good. And like a Jake McGee, Addison Reed. What would really be a step up is if you traded Nick Gordon and a couple other pieces and you landed like a filet mignon. You landed Chris Archer, and you did that in the winter, not at the trade deadline next year. But that would, you know, the Twins have never done that in their franchise's history.
It's a new regime.
They acquired Jack Morris later in his career.
But they could now. That's, this whole thing's changed.
We've never seen that top two or three prospect for a stud in his prime player. The closest was probably, what was it, John Smiley in 1992?
Midget Cummings, yes, that's probably it. But yeah, this the Ryan regime never did that. Now the one thing that makes this intriguing is if they deal Gordon, you're dealing from a position of positional strength, too. So it makes some sense. It's not like you deal him and say, oh, well, we just have Polanco left and that's it.
Yeah.
So you could make a pretty good case that Gordon would be a trade ship that makes perfect sense, especially for a starting pitcher.
Dave, you want to throw one out? You got one?
Yeah, I could do that. A year ago at this time, the Vikings defense began circling the drain after a very, very hot start. It's been a great defense so far. Phil, I believe you said, what, fifth in the league right now overall
points,
defensive ranking or points?
Points per game, yep.
Okay, well, that's pretty good. Tell me, boys, it was injuries, it was poor play, it was going rogue last year. How does it end for the defense this year?
I think it ends a lot like it has begun. I don't think you get the mutiny in Green Bay. I think you have enough quarterback options here too, to where like you're gonna, whether Sam Bradford hobbles back in 3 weeks or Bridgewater, you're not gonna have a huge quarterback crisis this season. You're gonna have a competent player, so I think you're gonna be competitive the rest of the way. And unless there's some catastrophic injury to Harrison Smith or someone, like if you lost Harrison Smith,
then it
changes this whole narrative. But
yes,
I think this remains, at worst, the fifth best defense in the NFL the rest of the season. I think they all learned from the second half last year.
And your defense also suffered in large part last year because your offense was awful and inept. Right now, it's not. I mean, it's not great, but it's not terrible. So I'm with Phil. I think that this ends with this defense being very good. I mean, keep in mind, you've got defensive ends who are very good. You've got Joseph at defensive tackle, who's fantastic. Rhodes is great. Smith is great. So, yeah, I think if these guys stay healthy, I think this remains an upper echelon defense. And I do think that if you go back, though, to what happened last year, it unraveled in part because your offense was atrocious.
For the record, the Vikings offense, pretty rarely in the last 15 years, pretty much since Randy Moss and Dante Culpepper were no longer lighting up in 2004, lighting up opposing defenses, since Brad Childress took over in 06, the only times they've really been top 10-ish offensively are Brett Favre in 2009 and maybe one other random Peterson season. They are currently 12th in the NFL offensively in yards per play. So they're moving on. If you told me you get a top 5 defense and the 12th best offense and take your chances, that's something you'd probably sign up for. All right, last one. How will this end up? We're halfway through the college football season for the Gophers. They started 3-0. They're 0-3 since. How will this end up record-wise for the Gophers?
Not with 9 wins.
Home against Illinois. Yeah, mathematically, that's going to be difficult. I guess they could run the table. Home against Illinois, at Iowa, at Michigan, home against Nebraska, at Northwestern, and home against number 5 right now, Wisconsin. How will this end up record-wise for the Gophers?
I think they're going to win on Saturday. Lovie Smith doesn't care. Lovie Smith is cashing a paycheck, and that's it. That club is terrible. And I think they beat Nebraska, and they lose Iowa, Michigan, Northwestern, Wisconsin. So they have two more wins. They have two more wins to get, so they'll get two wins in the Big Ten, and I think that would bring them up to 5 wins overall.
5-7 could get you to a bowl game. It definitely has in the past for teams. The Gophers went to a bowl game at 5-7 a couple years ago.
It makes me want to just puke all over myself.
David?
I don't even care about the record. It ends with a certain someone in the afternoon saying, I told you so.
Yeah.
I told you this whole thing was a sham.
I love that. 1 year, he's going to do that. And you're right. He will do that. the only winnable game, they're not going to beat Michigan. They're not going to beat Wisconsin. They're probably not winning at Iowa. Home against Illinois. God, even at Northwestern. I think they can win the home games against Illinois and maybe Nebraska.
That's what I said. Nebraska is off the charts awful. Nebraska is terrible.
I think they get 2 or 3.
Where's the third one?
I'll say 5-7 with Judd and sneak into a bowl game at 5-7.
There's no third one there that I see. There's two more wins. Illinois doesn't
Illinois,
care,
Nebraska,
and Nebraska
right?
is terrible.
I mean, can you beat Northwestern on the road?
I don't think so. Not this team.
It depends.
That has to be your third.
Not unless Demery Croft
looks
great.
A little bit better.
I mean, Michigan kind of sucks right now.
Michigan is not that good this season. There's three good teams, right? Conference. Ohio State's great. Wisconsin's very good. Penn State.
Yeah.
And I think after that, it's just, ugh.
Let's talk some Wolves and Spurs and state of the Wolves here going into this season with John Krasinski, Associated Press, Mackie and Judd.
Let's get back. Mackie and Judd are back on 1500 ESPN.
Karl Anthony Towns is going to be the best basketball player in the world in the next 5 to 7 years. I mean, he's unbelievable. Now there's a lot of pressure on Wiggins. He's gotten all that money now, and I agree with the owner. Hey, are you going to play better now that I'm giving you $107 million? I mean, yeah, you better play better. I think Minnesota, Tom is a hell of a coach. Tibbs is a hell of a coach. Minnesota is definitely on the right pace. But, man, there's a lot of pressure on those kids in Minnesota. They got a lot of pieces now.
Okay, cool.
They actually, if they were in the Eastern Conference, they might be the second best team in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, which isn't saying a lot,
no,
really.
It's not.
Especially after Hayward went down last night. John Krasinski covers the Wolves as close as anyone for the Associated Press. He's a friend of the show. Charles Barkley on Mike and Mike this morning in that soundbite said there's a lot of, he likes the Wolves, but there's a lot of pressure on the young kids. Do you view this season that way, Johnny, that there's just a lot of pressure on the Wolves?
I think so, Phil. I mean, when you look at it, this is an organization that has not had real live actual expectations kind of thrust on it for quite a while. I mean, really for the last 4 or 5 years, even last year when Tibbs came aboard, there was a lot of optimism, but it was also kind of hope, right? I mean, it was, hey, LaVine and Wiggins and Towns are still really young. They're very exciting and athletic. Let's see how big of a jump they can make in their first year under a coach who is known for winning and going to the playoffs. You know, you had that kind of dynamic of this team is going to be really fun to watch, but they're still a few years away. They've been a few years away for a long time. I don't think that you can say that they're a few years away anymore. They went and added a bunch of veterans to expedite this process, to get them going, to get them into the playoff picture today, this year, right now, even in a tough Western Conference. So it will be interesting to see how they handle that and how they kind of change or transform from a team that you hope is going to win, is going to be really fun to watch, and it's going to be kind of happy-go-lucky, and there's not real any pressure on them, to a team that is expected to win. If they don't make the playoffs this year, it's going to be considered a huge failure. So we'll see how they handle that. But, yeah, I think things have definitely changed in that regard from even, say, last year to what we're at this year.
Johnny, in practices so far, how much have you sensed a change in Tibbs? Because Tibbs came in here last year and he coached this team, but I sensed it wasn't his team. This now is his team.
Yeah, Judd, I think you're right on that. This is the ultimate referendum on what Tibbs can be as a coach, because he's got all of his guys now. He didn't want Rubio. He wanted more of a scoring point guard. He got Jeff Teague. He didn't want a bunch of young guys. He wanted established veterans who weren't going to make mistakes and who were going to be committed on defense. You go get Jimmy Butler and Taj Gibson. Yeah, Jamal Crawford and Aaron Brooks. I mean, these guys are all veterans that are kind of built. So the roster is built to play Tibbs ball and to kind of go at it in the way that he likes to grind through things, to be intense, to be in your face. So this is definitely going to be a more accurate reflection of who Tom Thibodeau is as a coach and how successful he can be. So if it doesn't work, that's going to be a pretty damning indictment. But I think that you can see in him that he's more comfortable with this group. I think he knows that he has the guys in the locker room to hold the young guys accountable a little bit better than he had last year. And he just has guys who fit his style. And so, he's never going to be one who's kind of slapping backs and shaking hands and kissing babies. But you do see some smiles. You do see some kind of, a brightness in his eyes when he watches these guys work for hours after practice on their games. I mean, that's what he's been waiting for a year and a half now.
John Krasinski, what's your read on Andrew Wiggins now that he signed this massive $150 million contract extension? As a player, what he can reasonably add to his repertoire this season, and just how he'll mesh with Jimmy Butler and Karl-Anthony Towns as maybe the third guy on this team?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to watch how that kind of develops and unfolds. I mean, you look at what he has done so far. I mean, there's no questioning he's one of the better scorers in the league. He can get to the free throw line as well as anybody. He has a fully developed post game, which is impressive for a wing of his age. And he jumped from 30% to 35% from 3-point range last year. So those things are all really, really good. And I do think that you can expect another jump from him in 3-point shooting this year. I think he's going to get more open looks because Jimmy Butler and Towns and Teague, and there's going to be so many more people that are attracting defensive attention. So he's going to get more open looks, and he's going to take more of them because they need him to. They don't have a kind of prototypical, 3-point gunner on this team. And so I think you could see him, climb up from 35 to 38% range. And I think those are all reasonable expectations. What they obviously really need to see from him is a step up in intensity on the defensive end and an increase on the rebounding side of things. I mean, he can't just go through games anymore where he scores 25 points and grabs one or two rebounds. This team needs him to rebound, to be physical, to use his athletic gifts to challenge people that way. I mean, they're going to attack the offensive glass and try and create second chance opportunities like that, because they don't have that 3-point shooter that can just get them that big bucket when they need it. So we'll have to see how that all plays out. I do think he will be better defensively because Jimmy Butler will be there to help him and also take the Kawhi Leonards of the world and take the LeBron Jameses of the world, and Wiggins won't be stuck there. He's got a long way to go in a couple of those categories before you can say that they really did the right thing by spending $150 million on him.
Johnny, what's your expectation of how Butler is going to help him? I mean, are we talking about encouragement on the court? Are we talking about glares on the court? Or are we talking about flat out, if he perceives the defense is not where it should be, taking Tibbs' place from a year ago and just flat out screaming?
Yeah, I think all of the above, Judd. I think what Jimmy did a lot in Chicago was, I think, more of the latter, of the screaming, the hollering, the barking, that kind of stuff. And there's a place for that, absolutely. There needs to be veterans who will hold these young guys accountable and jump on them when they're not doing the right thing. It can't all be just kids yelling at them and then them shaking their heads and saying, man, this guy's getting, carried away here. What's going on? So Jimmy's going to need to do that at times. But really, I do think one of the ultimate keys that Jimmy is going to have to bring with Andrew and Carl really is when Tibbs jumps on them and when Tibbs kind of reads them the riot act, then Jimmy has to be the guy who kind of pulls them aside, puts an arm around them and says, hey, don't get worried about the way the message is delivered. Just listen to the content of the message. And here's what he really means. Here's what he wants. And because he's a guy, a veteran, who is in his prime and is an all-NBA type player, I think his words will carry a little bit more weight than a Brandon Rush, a Cole Aldrich, a Jordan Hill, guys, you know, veterans who are absolutely not playing at all and can't make any impact really on the court from that perspective. So that's, you know, he's going to have to do a bunch of that. And they also have Taj Gibson and Jamal Crawford to help out in that regard as well. So it won't just be Butler, but these players, these veteran players are going to help Tom Thibodeau get his message through to the young guys, because I don't think it happened all that much last year.
What's your level of trust that this bench is going to be at least formidable and competitive, and that you're not going to lose 10-point leads every time you take the starters off the court?
Yeah, Phil, I mean, the biggest key to that is going to be the health of Jamal Crawford. Like, he has been a durable guy over the years, but he's 37, 38 years old now. And so you wonder just how, you know, how much is he going to be able to give? I think Shabazz Muhammad has looked great so far in the preseason, which is a huge development for them, because they need him to be that scorer, be that aggressive guy that can get them a bucket when the second unit is struggling. And he's in great shape. He's come back determined to try and get a bigger contract. And so far, so good there. If Crawford and Bielitsa can stay healthy, I think that second unit can be fine. Not, you know, will they be a great top of the line second unit? Probably not. But yeah, I think what they can do is prevent the team from falling off a cliff when Tibbs goes to them. I mean, you're also going to have Gorgui Dieng in that second unit instead of in the starting five, which is a help. And then you have Tyus, who I think will be better. You have Aaron Brooks if you need him, and then Crawford and Muhammad. It's a decent enough group. And I think the other thing that we'll have to obviously talk about here, guys, is that I think Tibbs is really going to stagger his starters to make sure that it's a rare occasion that you have all five of those guys on the court at the same time. You know, with the versatility of these starters, he can pull out maybe Towns early and put Dieng in, and then go back to Towns quickly in the second quarter when that second group comes in, or he can stick Butler or Wiggins out with that group if he wants to. And so there's going to be a lot of mixing and matching going on, I think, to prevent, you know, the thing just from completely falling apart like it did so often last year.
Johnny, Cat goes from being a very good player last year to how good this year in your mind?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear who which player?
Towns goes from
Towns.
Being
oh yeah,
very good, I mean, to how good this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is the year that he steps into the truly elite category. I mean, you look at what he did offensively even last year, and really in the first 2 years, you're talking in the company of Hakeem Olajuwon, Shaquille O'Neal, like Karl Malone, like that's the kind of production that he had at this young age, which is truly remarkable. I mean, the guy really has no ceiling there. And you talk to people on the team who have watched him in workouts, he's shooting the three ball even better than he did last year. I mean, there's several people with the Wolves tell me that he's probably their best three-point shooter. Like, and so he can do whatever he wants to create mismatches and do things that way. And then I do think you're going to see some steps forward defensively for him this year, because he played pretty well defensively when Kevin Garnett was on the floor with him, kind of directing traffic, telling him where to be and how to do things. And so he was missing that a lot last year. He was kind of directionless sometimes and didn't really grasp things. And so to have Gibson there with him in the front court, who is, you know, Garnett is so much better than Gibson. His prime is so much better than Gibson's prime was, but Gibson is still closer to his prime than Garnett was when he was here. So I really think that you're going to see him take steps that way too. And then that makes him an all-NBA guy. That makes him, maybe a second team or at least third team all-NBA player. And I mean, this kid is just going to be incredible this year.
One last question for you here, and it's, I don't know, this, I probably should have asked this 10 minutes ago because it might be a complicated question, but is Tom Thibodeau, despite how much he dominated as a coach in Chicago, you know, 6-7 years ago, with the way the NBA has evolved so much over that time period, is he a modern enough coach? And do you have questions about Tom Thibodeau?
What I would say is I think he can be. I think that last year he wasn't necessarily because he, for whatever reason, his message was not getting through to these guys. And he tried tried, and no matter what he was saying, they weren't picking it up. And so that's a bit of a concern. I will say, though, that what I saw from him in the preseason, especially from an offensive standpoint, with some of the increased ball movement, where they're going to get their three-point shots, things like that, he certainly is smart enough and knows the game well enough to adapt to where it's going. So I think that there's not really any problems with his system. It's just whether he can get his message through and have these guys want to eat the meal that he serves them. And that's why Butler and Gibson are so big and why he needed them there, because the meal that he was serving last year, no matter how much gravy or anything he put on it, they were not eating. And so that's going to be the thing to watch. And, can he not grind them to a pulp and find ways to reach them on a cerebral level that he did not do last year?
Right. Well, we're looking forward to it. It's a short off season for the NBA, but in some ways, because the wait has been so long since they acquired Jimmy Butler.
It feels like a long time.
The trades, it does, but we get to watch it tonight. So thank you, Johnny.
See you, Johnny.
You bet, guys. Thanks for having me.
Talk to you.
John Krasinski, Associated Press. I'm actually reading a really interesting article right now on ESPN.com. A big feature by Tom Haverstraw about Tom Thibodeau and the Timberwolves. And there's a nugget, I didn't realize this, about Karl-Anthony Towns I want to throw at you.
Okay.
When we come back here, Mackie and Judd.
Mackie and Judd now continue. We return on 1500 ESPN.
Don't be afraid to catch pills.
We know the opportunity that we have ahead of us. If we do the right things, if we guard, we share the ball, if we rebound or turn the ball over, all the things that Tibbs says to do. And we know that we can win. We have the potential to do that, but we got to go out there and do it. Like, we're not just going to get this overnight. You don't go from being what we were last year defensively to the best defensive team in the world tomorrow. There are going to be processes and steps. There are going to be games where we play really well on the defensive end, games where we probably play pretty bad, but we're just hoping on those nights we can outscore the opposing team. I want to win a championship. I'm not selling us short of just making the playoffs or just winning X amount of games. If you're saying I just want to make the playoffs, then you're not playing this for the right reason.
If we were to do a pie chart on Jimmy Butler, Phil Mackey, I don't know how I would distribute this yet, but I think it would be closer than you think. Impact on the court, because he's an all-star and just a really good player. Impact on the court as a pseudo coach and off the court. I think that when Johnny says that Tibbs' message didn't get through, I know why. People in their 20s, if you just bellow, people in their 20s are going to tune you out. Now, they might listen for a while, but when you play 80 games in training camp, right? Eventually, you're like, okay, I've heard this before, and I might want to do it, and I might not, but I'm going to tune you out. I think the most important thing that Tibbs did in bringing in Butler was he brought in a guy who's going to be respected, and because of that, I would actually expect to see Tibbs yell a little bit less, because if Butler says at times, Tom, I'll handle it.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that Tom Thibodeau is a brilliant defensive basketball mind and a brilliant basketball coach who doesn't maybe communicate in the most effective way always. I'm not privy to what happens at practice. I'm not saying he's a bad communicator, but I think yelling at players for 48 straight minutes and not sitting down it's probably not the best way to go about really getting through to young players, because they're gonna want to know why, they're gonna get annoyed with you and all this. So Jimmy Butler does act as a great bridge. One thing I do think you want to keep an eye on, and it's hard to really figure out, did Tom Thibodeau run those Bulls players into the ground and then Derrick Rose got hurt? Like, that's a narrative. I do think we should keep an eye on work and usage rate, especially of Karl-Anthony Towns, a 7-footer.
Mm-hmm.
I found a really interesting nugget on ESPN.com. Tom Haverstraw just posted this sometime this morning. I'm going to read you a couple paragraphs here.
All right.
While did not play rest situations, like did not play because of rest situations, skyrocketed across the NBA in the name of recovery and sports science, Karl-Anthony Towns was an exception. Last season, Karl-Anthony Towns became the first 7-footer to top 3,000 minutes in 6 years. The rare 7-foot Iron Man. So I'm going to stop there. Like, at first glance, you'd think, yes, like KG did the same thing, right? KG was a 7-footer who played 40 minutes a night, The guy played 3,000 minutes a season for a number of years with the Timberwolves, and he was durable. He didn't. I mean, he rarely missed time with injury, if ever, and he wound up playing until he was 40 years old, and finally, at an age where a lot of guys break down, he started to break down.
Right.
But let me continue. KG is definitely the exception in that regard.
All right.
It's a distinction that doesn't always last, the 7-foot Ironman. The last 7-footer who played all 82 games in his first two seasons was Brook Lopez, who went on to miss 134 games over his next 4 years from assorted foot and ankle problems. Before Lopez, the last 7-footer to play all 164 in his first two seasons was Yao Ming, whom Tom Thibodeau coincidentally worked with as an assistant coach in Houston for 4 seasons. Once an Ironman, Yao Ming was just 28 years old when he played his last full season in the NBA before retiring from foot problems. So, in general, playing a 7-footer, as tempting as it may be, 3,000 minutes in every single game, it might not be the best long-term strategy. So I think that's something to keep an eye on with, especially Karl-Anthony Towns. Like, I get that he's a super freak. He's athletic. He can do everything. He's the best player on the team.
Right.
But when you're that big and the game is that fast-paced and you're up and down and it's physical and you're traveling and all these things, like...
And there's also, while I thought the resting thing got to be a little bit overboard in the past couple of years, and especially last year, the science does back up that playing all the time is not good for you, right?
Yeah.
I mean, superstars weren't being rested because coaches said, you know what, tonight, I don't really care about the game. They were being rested because there was a philosophy. And the important thing, too, to keep in mind about this is if you are going to have, which this team does, aspirations of playing into the spring, well, now you really got to watch that. And if you go back to Tibbs' Bulls teams, he played those guys an absolute ton. So, yeah, I would say that there is a definite area here where if you have an assistant coach or somebody or player who's got Tibbs' ear, i.e. Jimmy Butler, it would be a good idea to say, you don't have to sit him from this game, certainly, but it also might make sense not to wear him out on an arbitrary December night against the Clippers,
well,
for instance.
Here's more where that came from. This is amazing stuff from Tom Haberstroh, ESPN.com. Players logging 3,000 minutes in today's NBA are fossils of a different era. As recently as 2005-06, 20 players crossed the 3,000-minute threshold. So 12 years ago, you had 20 guys in the league who are still 3,000-plus minutes, including Kevin Garnett. By 2009-10, that number had dwindled from 20 down to 11. And in 2015-16, there was one guy, James Harden, who played over 3,000 minutes. Last season, there were two players in the league who played over 3,000 minutes. Karl-Anthony Towns, and who do you think the other one is?
Over 3,000
The minutes. Only two players who played over 3,000 minutes in the NBA last year. Cat and who? Dave Harrigan.
Andrew Wiggins.
And Andrew Wiggins.
He was top minutes in the NBA.
Yep. Well, so, as the article continues, Tom Thibodeau says, well, young guys are going to play more. They can take it. Is that the right side to be on right now, though, where you're defying what everyone else is doing and saying the young guys are going to play?
With Towns, absolutely not. Here's my question about Tibbs, too. I think with Tibbs, and I like him and I think he's a good coach, but I think with Tibbs, we are definitely dealing with a shelf life guy here. I mean, I don't think this is a 10-year deal. I think this is a guy.
That's the contract is 8 years, right? Or is it 10?
It's like 8 years. I forget if it's 10, but
I think it's 8.
But my point is he could kick himself upstairs eventually. But I think that there is a window with a guy like this in which you're going to win. And after that, the message is going to get lost. Jimmy Butler's either going to leave and or eventually retire. My point being is this is not a situation where I think you're saying, okay, you got more long term here. This is a situation where you've got Butler, who's a star player, Towns, who's a star player. Wiggins is potentially a star player and certainly a very good player. And so you really want to have success here within, I would say, the next 3 years or so. Because at some point in time, the Tibbs style is going to wear on everybody, including Cat.
3 years is too long because Butler, I think, has an opt-out after the second one. Like, if you don't make the playoffs this year or next year, then
No, and I think you'll make the playoffs, but what I'm saying is to make a deep run. Yeah. And I think Butler might come back. But my point is, a guy like Towns is eventually going to say, I might want to try my own thing here as far as coaches go.
Here's another, man, this story. I'm just reading this story as the show goes. Paul Biancardi learned what Tom Thibodeau was all about more than 30 years ago. Tom Thibodeau's first head coaching job came when he was just 26 years old in 1984. He was promoted to the head coaching position at Salem State in Massachusetts, and Biancardi was the tri-captain along with a couple other players.
Mm-hmm.
So Biancardi, who coached at Wright State and is now ESPN's recruiting analyst, remembers Tom Thibodeau as basketball obsessive. One time, Tibbs asked Biancardi for a ride to the local mechanic to pick up his car. On the way, Tibbs explained that he had just broken up with a girl he wanted to get engaged to and married. Why'd you guys break up? Tom Thibodeau said, because basketball got in the way.
Oh, that is the least surprising story I've ever heard. The fact that he, listen, the fact that he joined us and was passionate about this, back foot defense, like he'd studied it all offseason. I mean, this is a guy who got in Mussey's pocket, basically. And Musselman, you talk about basketball obsessed, right? Same type of guy. And loved every second of it. I mean, Tibbs is, when you watch him, you can tell that he goes, I mean, he basically gets there at what, 5:30 in the morning and grinds film. He is a football coach masquerading as a basketball
coach. And that's awesome. I love it. I'm excited to watch it. Let's make sure Carl Anthony Towns doesn't turn into, you know, Yao Ming with foot problems
or something.
So just pump the brakes on the minutes a little bit, mm-hmm. Mackie and Judd.
I want to win a championship. I'm not selling us short of just making the playoffs or just winning X amount of games. If you're saying I just want to make the playoffs, then you're not playing this for the right reason.
Phil Mackey, Judd Zolgad.
It's weird, it smells, and it's embarrassing.
Mackey and Judd on 1500 ESPN.
Listen. Want to win a 55-inch TCL Roku TV? You can join Manny and just try to do just that at Moose Bar and Grill, Northeast Minneapolis, 5 to 7 this Saturday for the ultimate college football viewing party with Dos Equis. Come and enjoy an ice-cold Dos Equis and register to win that brand-new TV. Put game day over everything this college football season with Dos Equis, the official beer sponsor of the college football playoffs. All the details at 1500ESPN.com.
They're going up. Oh, my goodness. Hayward came down so hard. Okay. Hayward broke his leg. Hayward has broken his leg. Oh, my gosh. And that is how quickly a season can change.
We keep getting, thankfully, the screenshots and the videos of horrific sports injuries have slowed down in our timelines. But, yeah, a lot of people chiming in. Ben via email. Do a Google search for the Louisville basketball player, Kevin Ware.
No, I don't need to.
The Kevin Ware injury. Last night, the Hayward injury is for sure top five most disgusting sports injuries I've ever seen watching TV or live.
Yes.
I still think Kevin Ware is number one.
Well, the bone was sticking out of his skin.
Yeah.
That's not okay. If your appendage is twisted wrong, that makes me sick. It makes me far more sick when your appendage is twisted wrong and there's a bone sticking out of your skin.
That's never.
Ugh.
Yeah. I didn't realize the Jason Kendall one where he broke his ankle going to first base. I didn't realize how bad that was.
I remember it
being bad, but like someone sent that one too. So gross. I'm just going through our emails here. We appreciate how sadistic and disgusting our listeners are. 651-646-8255. 877-615-1500. Randy in Cottage Grove. What's going on, Randy?
Hey, Randy.
I'm having a great week. That's what's going on.
Yeah, the Vikings with a big win over the Packers last weekend.
We had a huge win. We smoked them. And all those people at my work who wanted to talk about, well, the green and gold, oh, they're going to come in and they're going to be so good. We doubled them up.
I think more than doubled them up, right? Wasn't it 23-10?
We crushed them.
But you did it in part because Anthony Barr decided to cheap shot the Packers star quarterback. Keep that in mind.
No, that's a football move, Jeff, okay? That's a football move. I'm going to say that right now. That's bogus. That's what you think? That's bogus, okay? We beat them. We beat them fair and square. You know, and you know what? By the way, Ted Thompson, you ain't got the stones to sign the guy that you should be signing. Brett Favre, he's ready. He would play right now. You know that he would. Thompson, you ain't got the stones. Okay?
I agree with Randy. I don't think Ted Thompson has any stones. Totally.
Speaking of injuries, okay? You guys want to talk about all these injuries? You know, this is part of the game, okay? You get hurt, It's part of playing the game, as they say. You know, I play a lot of sports over the years, a lot of rec, okay? A fair amount of rec. We do softball, we do bowling. Yeah. I've had some injuries.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I've had a couple nasty ones, okay? I did my ankle a couple times running the first. That's pretty standard. That's why they got those wider bags now, okay? So you step on the orange part, and the other guy gets the other part. I also did, in bowling, I did one, I don't know how to say it on the air, on your air, so I don't get you in trouble, but I tore my my area. I tore my area bowling. It was the lanes were too oily.
What?
You step over the line?
The lanes were too oily. I tried to avoid a fault, okay? Because you get, you know, I don't know, you guys probably just bowl for fun. I bowl in league, okay? Yeah. And if you go over that little line, you hear a buzzer, and your frame is, you got zero, okay? That can screw up your whole match. Well, I tried to stop because I could sense myself sliding, and I did what, you know, what the gymnastics call the splits. I tore part of my undercarriage.
I
just hope you filed a suit against this particular bowling alley.
I can whip up some photo. Took some at the time because it was gnarly. It really was gnarly.
Yeah, why don't you should send some photos to @1500ESPN_Royce. That would be great. You could just tweet those at Pat.
I'll do that. Okay, bye. Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks, Randy.
Did Randy just call in basically to, like, why did he just call it? Just to tell us about
the last part,
tearing his
stuff. That was really, really unnecessary. Much like much of this.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I'm surprised he didn't agree that was a definite cheap shot. Aaron Rodgers had no chance there. I mean, Anthony Barr took him down, and
just for the record, the NFL has not. There's been no like fallout from that. The NFL didn't go back and say, "Oh yeah, in retrospect, that should have been a 15-yard penalty."
Well, if they called the Packers to say that it should have been, the Packers technically aren't supposed to tell the media. So there's a chance that they did, and we'll find out if Barr got fined, which I don't think he will. But if he gets fined, we'll find out like Thursday.
Yeah, the dude. What's up, man?
Dude.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Real quick, super excited about the T-Wolves starting tonight. Go Wolves.
Heck yeah, it's fun.
Randy, Cottage Grove, and frankly, all Vikings fans, their admiration for Brett Favre is disgusting. I don't get it. I've never understood it. I think you're a bunch of traitors and cowards for welcoming him here in 2009, and I was super excited to watch him throw that pick in the championship game. You got what you deserve. That's all I wanted to say. Thanks, guys.
You know, I think when
the dude,
it comes
a Chiefs fan, by the way.
He is a Chiefs fan.
That's why he was excited.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's tough. I know that not every franchise can have, you know, deified quarterbacks like Elvis Gerbach in their franchise annals.
I'm a Steve DeBerg guy.
Are you?
Yeah. I think he's bitter that his team just got waxed by the Steelers this past week. I think he's still bitter.
Oh, no question about
I'd still take where the Chiefs fans are. Like, they're 5-1, and
he probably had bet.
They
probably
know
bet
things are going to go south in the playoffs.
Andy like Reid. Andy Reid, you always know that's going to happen. That's part of
Let's take one more quick. Dan, you got like 30 seconds. We're up against top of the hour. Go ahead.
Okay, well, then I have nothing novel to say, but I want you guys to confirm or deny my theory that Randy from Cottage Grove, there's no way that guy's legit. That's got to be a gag on your part. That guy cannot seriously be just a regular caller. I thought about it, he did,
unless he's pulling the ultimate ruse, he showed up at the state fair and asked a question in person. Was it a year and a half ago?
Yes.
Viking Zubas, and I believe it was a Brett Favre Vikings jersey.
Yep.
And sunglasses.
That guy's a genius then, and we're all fools. So thank you guys. Appreciate it.
Well, we're definitely fools.
Well, that's well put. It's very well put and very accurate.
I want to give some Pat Shurmur love when we come back. I want to throw a couple of things at you regarding the brilliance of Pat Shurmur, Vikings offensive coordinator, all right?